Hare Krishna again. So, we finished fifth chapter exam. Most of you wrote, right? So, everybody wrote here, I think. Yeah, you didn't.
Mataji, I had a vertigo issue.
Okay.
Like in middle of your infection and then when you get like completely dizzy.
Oh, that's okay. If you want to write, you can. Email you. You can write it at home also and send it to me.
I
will tell you when I'm like ready.
Then. Yeah, sure.
Sir, I also please. Did not write.
Yeah.
Plan.
Yeah, please, yeah. Yeah, so we'll start 6th chapter today. 6th chapter is entitled Dhyana Yoga. Chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. So, the connection between the chapters is in chapter, who knows the connection? I think we hinted about that last time. Oh, you missed the class? I don't know. You were there. Yeah,
I missed the class. Verse 27 and 28,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So, verse 27 and 28. So, the whole chapter, Krishna talks about how to attain supreme using Nishkama Karma Yoga. Right? That's the whole chapter about. But in 27 and 28, he talks about how to attain the same supreme using the Ashtanga Yoga process. Or Dhyana Yoga. So, that was just a preview given in the 5th chapter. Now, 6th chapter is dedicated to the whole process. The most of the chapter is about the Ashtanga Yoga. But primarily, you know, the take home for us is Krishna is trying to tell us how that is so impractical in this age. You know, that's the key point for us actually. You know, we have to study the whole thing to come to the conclusion that, you know, we cannot do it anyway in this age. But to have that conviction, Krishna is detailing all the, you know, reasons. Then other parts of 6th chapter is like Krishna talks about very important for all the sadhakas about how to control the mind. You know, what's the best way to control, and Krishna gives some tips, you know, what to do about it. And then he also talks about a very significant point, which is about, we all have this question, right? Okay, I'm practicing somewhat sincerity and somewhat dedication, but I've taken up later in my life this process. What if I may not be successful at the end of this life? What happens to me? You know, is it all waste? We have all these questions, right? So that question is answered in this chapter. What happens to a person who practices yoga for a long time and stops? Or of a person who practices for a short time and stops? What's the destination of these two types of yogis? Very, very crucial for us to understand. So, you know, we have faith about the process. It's also given in 6th chapter. So, and also the culminating verse in 6th chapter, Krishna says, you know, of all the types of yogis, you know, we will cover the 5 chapters. Krishna talked about Jnana Yoga, he talked about Nishkama Karma Yoga, he talked about Sankhya Yoga, Buddhi Yoga, right? All types of yoga. And in now Dhyana Yoga, after all of this, the culmination, you know, the highest form of yoga is given in the last verse in the 6th chapter, which is Bhakti Yoga. So that's, you know, the peak of all the yogas. So if you have any doubt about all these types of yogas, which is the highest, Krishna clearly declares in the last verse that Bhakti Yoga is the topmost. So then we'll cover a few verses in this chapter. Okay. So text number 1. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karotiya. Sa sanyasi cha yogi cha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. So again he is talking about, you know, who is the real yogi. So Krishna is saying the real yogi is the one who is unattached to the fruits of his work. The same concept, you know, of Nishkam Karma Yoga. Who is not attached to the fruits of work. But then, you know, what is his motivation? Why does he work? He works because he is obligated. That means he works because it's a matter of duty. And that person is in renounced order of life. That means he is already, is a sannyasi. But who is the person who is not a sannyasi or yogi? The person who lights no fire. So he's talking about Brahmanas have to do homams, right? Homa, Agnihotras. So that is their prescribed duties, Brahmanas. So one who lights no fire means somebody at one point in their life, they decide that, okay, now I'm renounced. So I don't need to do any more my prescribed duties. So I don't need to do my homas, sacrifices, everything. So they stop from lighting their fire. So they stop their prescribed duties actually. And the other point is one who performs no duty. The person who gives up his duties. So Krishna is saying a person who gives up their prescribed duties is not the one who is a true sannyasi or yogi. But whereas a person who does it as an obligation or does it because it ought to be done. Does it because he is not attached, but he has to do it as a matter of duty.
To set an example,
matter of duty. Here he is saying it's as a matter of, as he is obligated, means as a matter of duty. Actually in 14th chapter or 18th chapter also it comes, Krishna describes about different modes and different qualities of the modes, like, you know, work in the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance, and food in the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance, and renunciation in three modes. So there he says, you know, the work in the mode of goodness is a person who does it just because it ought to be done without hankering for good or bad, you know, success or failure. So basically that is mode of goodness, doing because it ought to be done. So we can monitor ourselves, like sometimes, you know, the various duties we do, what is our motivation, like, you know, is it like, you know, because we want something back, like we get some recognition or something or some satisfaction, or at a higher level, you know, we should all proceed towards this. At higher level, we should at least do because of mode of goodness. Motivation should be, what is the motivation for mode of goodness people? Motivation for service or any work, what should be the motivation for people in mode of goodness? Let's say all the modes. Passion, mode of ignorance, what is the motivation for them?
Sense gratification.
More sense gratification, or sometimes actually they cannot even get themselves to work because they're mostly in sleep and drinking and all bad habits, so they don't even get into doing the real duties. Mode of passion, what would be their motivation?
Recognition, money, and enjoy
more after that. Right? That's typically, you know, how we do things. In mode of goodness?
I mean, like, one is a duty.
Huh.
Second, for sustaining, at least. May not be for comforts, but to lead the...
Yeah, at least sustain.
But by the mode of goodness, that's when you transcend the three modes of nature. That is the, like, last step when you can...
No. The mode of goodness is still in within the three modes. Within the three modes.
And
so
service.
The highest mode, as a service... Mainly, you know, it's for purification. Mode of goodness, we do service, we do chanting, we do everything for purification. Krishna, I don't have any motivation in doing my service, but I need to get purified. But still, that is a motive.
So, when you say work, is it like any service or
anything,
office work or something?
Anything.
Hmm.
Because everything for devotee, everything is service.
Office work, okay.
Everything is service.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, the motivation will be, I'm doing just for my purification. Like, you know, I just want to do for my purification. But what is the motivation for a person in Shuddha Sattva, or one who transcends the modes, or one who is a pure devotee? What will be his motivation for doing work?
Pleasing Krishna.
Yeah, just to please Krishna. Forget about my purification. Forget about, you know, what do I get and all this, you know, other things we talked about, all other sub-results. He talks about only, you know, pleasing Krishna. So here... Krishna is talking about sannyasi and yogi. So yogi here means many things. It could be either, you know, all the types of yogi we talked about. Jnana yogi, dhyana yogi, and ashtanga yogi, of same, and then bhakti yogi. Everybody, yeah, at least for the couple of verses, it's going to be like that. So in general, you know, any type of person who's aspiring a transcendental goal. No, we should understand what are the goals for different types of yogis actually. For a person is jnana yoga. Person who is jnana yogi, what is his goal? What is the transcendental goal for him? Jnana yogi means speculation, mental speculation, all this stuff.
To find the root.
Attain Brahman.
Brahman. So he is focusing on merging into the impersonal Brahman. He does mental speculation and analysis and all those things, and he wants to go into Brahman. What about for Ashtanga yogi or jnana yogi, what is his goal? What is his...
Inside.
Yeah, so their goal is Paramatma within. So their final destination or their meditation, their object of worship is the Paramatma. For bhakti yogis, who is the object of worship?
Bhagavan's
Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So that itself shows the bhakti yogi is the topmost, because Krishna is the most complete form of the absolute truth, right? Like he is the most complete form. We talked about three aspects of absolute truth. One is Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. And Bhagavan is the one who is the source of Brahman and Paramatma. So that's another way bhakti yogi is the topmost, because his goal is topmost.
Mataji, we talk about all this, like to please Krishna's senses and to please Krishna's senses. Has anywhere Krishna specified like all the details, like what pleases him?
Has anywhere Krishna specified?
Like do you have the like list of levers and all these things where specifically he mentioned this is what pleases me the most or?
Yeah, so many of the verses in Bhagavad Gita, we can take it like that. Like, you know, Krishna directly says many things, you know. He says, yad karoshi, yad yashnashi, yad juhoshi, dadati yash. You know, whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, whatever you charities you perform, you do it as an offering to me. So you do everything as an offering to me. And he says, manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evesha satyamte pratijane priyosime. He says, you know, always think of me. Man mana bhava madbhakt, become my devotee, offer obeisances unto me, offer your homage unto me, thus you will come to me, because I promise you there is no failure for this.
Mm-hmm.
Then he says sarva dharma, ultimate thing, right? Sarva dharma parityaja mam ekam shri. You know, give up all the kinds of religion and just surrender unto me. You know, all these instructions are given.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, like, you know, we, of course, you know, first of all, we read Bhagavad Gita on our own. We don't understand, you know, what is the full import, even if, despite the commentary. You know, we have to hear from devotees. No, like every time we hear from devotees, it's such a nice understanding actually, you know. I hear lectures, right, to prepare for the class. It's like so much, they have other devotees have so much more realization and so much more complete understanding. You know, it's so wonderful. You always feel, no, I don't know anything about Gita. It's like that. It's like so nice. So there are many, you know, you can understand Bhagavad Gita in many, many layers. And as we become more and more purified and approach Gita properly, Krishna will reveal as it goes. You know, especially the best way to learn is to teach. If you get an opportunity to teach, that's very good. So then, so the problem is, like, even if despite commentary, even if hearing from devotees, we may not understand the, you know, how to apply them. We have all the, you know, rules, these are the things, but we don't know how to apply. So that's where our acharyas, they give us, you know, what is a practical way to fulfill the instructions of Krishna. So the process which is given by our acharyas and Srila Prabhupada, you know, for us directly, is non-different from all the instructions, culmination of all the instructions of Sri Krishna and as well as Sri Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they have given us the process. So we have to get familiarize ourselves with the process, the very basic process, chant 16 rounds and follow four regulative principles and follow Ekadashi, follow festivals. That's a basic, you know, basic thing we do. And everything, whatever we do, remember Krishna in all the activities we do. That's, you know, so that's so wonderful actually. If you see, the purport Prabhupada says, Jnana Yogis, they have to spend so much time trying to meditate on the Supreme. But Krishna, Prabhupada says, from the day one, Bhakti Yogi is already meditating on his Lord. Right? From the day one, we already focus on Krishna. So we don't have to wait for, you know, until our mind is controlled, all those things, and then start meditating on our object of worship. No, that's why, you know, it's, first of all, bhakti yogi, yoga itself is so wonderful, and we are so fortunate that this process is given to us in a way, most sublime manner, from the most authentic sources. All we have to do is, you know, have some faith, and we also are given the association of devotees. Just take it up seriously and, you know, take as much advantage as possible from the association and the scriptures and the sadhus, and then, you know, just make progress. That's all, you know, make ourselves, you know, perfect.
Thank you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
One question, this line that you have already explained, but he who lights no fire, so are we talking about any karmakanda process or the daily office work, or what, which kind of work we are pointing on?
Yeah, here? Specifically of this, Srila Prabhupada tells in the purport also, he's talking about brahmanas. Brahmanas, their duties is to do yagyas, you know, like they do all this maybe part of karmakanda only. All
this
when
let's say I want to just apply for like myself, so which kind of task, like office work or karmakanda process, like I wear this like
first landing. Exactly, literally this means you know that, right? Brahmanas who is doing so he's saying that Krishna is saying those brahmanas who stop lighting fire thinking that okay, I am now sannyasi, I don't want to do my prescribed duties, that person is not a yogi, Krishna is saying. So if you understand that, what does it mean to us is that, let's say at some point we say, okay, now I'm a yogi, I'm a sannyasi, I'll not go to work, I'll not take care of my wife, I'll not take care of my children. If we start doing that, then we are not following this. But rather, we should do those things in a detached fashion. Right? That's the way we should do. Okay, so we'll read part of the purport. First few lines in this chapter.
In this chapter, the Lord explains that the process of the Eightfold Yoga System is a means to control the mind and the senses. However, this is very difficult for people in general to perform, especially in the age of Kali. Although the Eightfold Yoga System is recommended in this chapter, the Lord emphasizes that the process of Karma Yoga or acting in Krishna consciousness is better.
Yeah, we can pause there. Yeah, so that's the same thing. Even though Eightfold System is described, actually we should not miss the point that Karma Yoga or acting in Krishna consciousness is better. So, Eightfold thing, I don't know whether any of the purports will cover it. So maybe it's come now, so I can give the... So, the eight folds of this Ashtanga Yoga, you can write down if you want. First is Yama. Yama and Niyama. So, Yama is don'ts. Don'ts means restraints. Restraints for the senses. So don't do this, don't eat this, don't go there, like that. Yama. Niyama is do's.
Niyama
means do's. So things which will help one to advance. Like, you know, whatever, you know, things we need to. For example, for us, chant 16 rounds. Then asana. Next stages. These are not stages. These are different aspects of the eightfold. That's why it's called eightfold.
Oh, so it's not categorized into two.
It's not a one by one sequential thing. It's all together they do.
So one is Yama, Yama is one part of the eightfolds.
Yes.
Oh.
Yama, no, these are two parts of the... Yama is one, Niyama is one. Next one is asana.
Okay.
Asana is different physical postures and all these things of sitting, standing, everything, asana. Then next comes, this one helps in regulating the mind. Right? Then after that, pranayama. So this controls the breathing process in outside, and there are a lot of rechika and all this pranayama asanas, right, generally. So these things helps in because the breath is considered very close to the mind. So by controlling the breath, we control the mind. It's easy to control the mind. So that's the philosophy behind it. So then do pranayama. After that, start pratyahara. Pratyahara is detaching the mind from materialistic activities or withdrawing the senses from sense objects. So let's say while trying to practice pranayama, suddenly we feel, okay, I have desire to eat gulab jamun or so many things, right? So now you start to withdraw yourself from those materialistic activities. Then by doing that slowly, dharana, you try to fix yourself on your object of worship. So by slowly withdrawing the mind away, try to focus on the Supreme, which is, you know, Paramatma for a Ashtanga Yogi, for us it's a Krishna. Then little bit concentration will come, and if the concentration meditation increases in time and in, you know, this thing, then it becomes dhyana. So you can focus on the Supreme for a long time. So it becomes like a meditation, dhyana, next stage. And after that, once the dhyana increases for a long time, you can do it for a long time, you can focus on your Supreme, then it becomes samadhi. That's the last stage. That samadhi is a complete absorption of the mind in the Supreme. And for also for a long period of time. So these are different, folds. These are eight folds of last part is actually stages. Like dharana, dhyana, samadhi, they go one after the other. No, they are increased in increased absorption. And also one thing to note is the first thing, yama. You know, the person who starts at the earlier stage doing this yama, niyama. Or rather, one person who is at the lowest stage in the ladder, if you can consider this as a ladder, the lowest stage is called Yoga Rurukshu. That comes in the next verse also. Yoga Rurukshu. And the highest, topmost stage, person who is in Samadhi is called Yoga Ruda. That means who attained the Supreme of the, who attained the final destination, Yoga Ruda. So the beginner of any yogic process is called Yoga Rurukshu. But whereas the person who attained the culmination of the yoga process is called Yoga Ruda. Or rather that stage is called Yoga Ruda. Okay, so that's the eightfold, like some description. I think you may be asked about this. So this I can write down. Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. Okay, so we'll continue. Further down, Krishna Prabhupada explains that can we read last three lines of the first paragraph? Similarly, the living entity, the living entity who acts for satisfaction of the supreme whole and not for personal satisfaction is the perfect sannyasi, the perfect yogi. So this we know, right? Who acts for supreme whole is a perfect sannyasi, perfect yogi. So then next paragraph, Prabhupada explains about how, I'm summarizing this so we don't read the purport, how a mystic yogi as well as Jnana yogi, both of them have a personal goal. Even though their goal is merging into Brahman or goal is Paramatma, or mystic yogi, you know, he wants mystic powers, there is still a selfish motive. So then further down he says, but a person acting in Krishna consciousness, last four lines of the second paragraph, a person acting in Krishna consciousness.
But a person acting in Krishna consciousness works for the satisfaction of the whole without self-interest. A Krishna conscious person has no desire for self-satisfaction. His criterion of success is the satisfaction of Krishna, and thus he is the perfect sannyasi or perfect yogi. Lord Chaitanya, the highest perfectional symbol of renunciation, prays in this way. Na dhanam na janam na sundarin kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishware bhavatar bhakti rahe tuki chai. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor to enjoy beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. What I want only is the causeless mercy of your devotional service in my life, birth after birth.
So that's when a person in Krishna consciousness, he works only for the satisfaction of the whole. No, for Krishna, but without any desire for self-satisfaction.
In the other two, why do you say that there's a...
Prabhupada says that even, you know, merging in the impersonal Brahman is actually, you know, it's the sense gratification of the highest point. It's because you are aiming for liberation and there is no service for Krishna. You just want your emancipation, right? And then whereas mystic yogi, he has a selfish interest of getting mystic powers. Ashtanga yogi, they get mystic. This mystic yogi is not talking about Ashtanga yogi. Mystic yogi, they follow yoga system and get the mystic powers. So they want that some kind of, you know, position, prestige in society and like that. But whereas bhakti yogi is the one, of course we are not, he is talking about a fully Krishna conscious person. We are not really working for only for Krishna satisfaction, right? If we analyze, we have so many motives, right? But a fully Krishna conscious person can be that person, you know, very pure sannyasi, perfect sannyasi and perfect yogi. That's why Krishna says such a person is very dear to me. That's the last words in the Bhagavad Gita of this chapter. He says, you know, Madgate Nantaratmana. Yoginam api sarvesham. Among all the yogis, the person who's in consciousness, you know, meditating on me, is the highest, is the topmost, and he is very dear to me. That's why, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that I don't desire any wealth, beautiful woman, or any number of followers. If we leave all these things, let's say it's easy to leave wealth and women, it's very, very, gross, right? It's gross things go away fast in Krishna consciousness. We see very quickly that, you know, we don't have any more desire to eat outside or any more, you know, sex interest or these gross things, you know, it easily goes away. But the subtle things is the one it takes long time to go, you know, the lust and the desire for prestige, adoration or followers, you know, at a very, very smaller stage or bigger stage. These things, you know, we have to struggle so much. Many of them, they go away only by the mercy of spiritual master. Only by the causeless mercy of spiritual master and by doing menial service to spiritual master, by pleasing spiritual master, those things can happen, only those things. Many of them, no, we cannot do on our own, it's very tough. So that's why it's important to, you know, take shelter of spiritual master and get, you know, get our ticket back home, back to garden. Okay, so we'll continue the next verse. Text number 2. Yam sanyasam iti prahur yogam tam viddhi pandava nahi asanyasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kashana. What is called renunciation, you should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself to this with the Supreme. O son of Pandu, for one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. So here we see Krishna is giving us another formula. We have seen so many formulas so far, right, in Bhagavad Gita. Can we recollect some of the formulas we studied? We've studied some formulas. Fifth, last verse in 5th chapter, what is the formula?
Peace.
Peace formula. What is the peace formula in summary?
Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and supreme proprietor and
Paramatma.
And yeah, Paramatma.
Our supreme well-wishing friend.
Yeah. So
one who knows all this, he attains the thanks from material misery. So this is peace formula. And in earlier in the chapter, we found another formula for sense gratification. Sense gratification is equal to?
Misery.
That's another formula. And earlier, we also saw this formula like where Krishna is saying Jnana Yoga is equal to Sankhya Yoga, right? He says, you know, there are different aspects of the same. One is like finding the root, other one is watering the root, right? Jnana Yoga, Sankhya Yoga is same, but no, rather... Sankhya Yoga and Buddhi Yoga is same. Then, right? Any other formulas? That's all, summary. So here the formula Krishna is giving is, sannyasa is equal to yoga. What is called renunciation, you should know to be same as yoga. So sannyasa is equal to yoga. So how do we let's understand both the aspects. So what does sannyasa usually mean? Means giving up things, right? Giving up things which are for sense gratification, giving up sense, materialistic sense propensities. Like Kavi, that is typical sannyasi in the definition. Yoga means to linking oneself to Supreme. That's the real definition of, that's what Prabhupada says in the next paragraph, I think. Yeah. Yoga means to link oneself to the Supreme. So how are both equal?
One is renouncing from material objects and linking himself to Supreme,
because that you've got. We discussed about this example, right?
Axe
and rock. Can you tell that analogy?
If you have, I don't know which one you hold first, but if you have a rock in your hand or axe in your hand, if you want to lift a rock, you can either place this down and lift it, or while holding this, you can lift this and then place it down, like release the other one. You can do parallelly, like. So Krishna consciousness is, while we are holding this other thing, we are taking the bhakti, like Krishna consciousness, and then leaving the material things.
Okay, so we are getting attached to Krishna, so automatically by doing that, gradually we get detached from matter. So we are doing both aspects, even though we are not consciously cultivating it, it's happening like that. So similarly, you know, by linking ourselves to the Supreme or Krishna, automatically we are becoming a sannyasi, which is like giving up from material propensities. So that's why sannyasa is equal to yoga. That's for bhakti yogis, but in general it may not work. It may not work, because just by giving up things, somebody may artificially do it without having a transcendental goal, or rather linking oneself with Supreme, then it may not work. Okay, so we'll read a couple of lines in the purport. Like maybe 8 lines down. But a person in Krishna consciousness.
But a person in Krishna consciousness has no opportunity to engage his senses in anything which is not for the purpose of Krishna. Therefore, a Krishna conscious person is simultaneously a sannyasi and a yogi. The purpose of knowledge and of restraining the senses, as prescribed in the Jnana and Yoga processes, is automatically served in Krishna consciousness. If one is unable to give up the activities of his selfish nature, then jnana and yoga are of no avail. The real aim is for a living entity to give up all selfish satisfaction and to be prepared to satisfy the Supreme. A Krishna conscious person has no desire for any kind of self-enjoyment. He is always engaged for the enjoyment of the Supreme. One who has no information of the Supreme must therefore be engaged in self-satisfaction, because no one can stand on the platform of inactivity. All purposes are perfectly served by the practice of Krishna consciousness.
So Prabhupada is again saying Krishna conscious person is simultaneously a sannyasi and a yogi. So he's acting on his constitutional position as well as he's following this yama niyama of a yogi, right? Because he's automatically restraining the senses by engaging in Krishna service. And another point Krishna Prabhupada is saying is, if jnana and yoga processes, they don't help one become selfless, then there is no use. All this jnana yoga process and other yoga process, if they don't help one become selfless, then there is no use. There is no avail. There is no use. But whereas in bhakti yoga, there is a way in which one can come to the stage of having no other desire other than pleasure of the Lord. So this point, I think once I mentioned, there is one stage in our bhakti, devotional service, where we are attached to the activity. We like certain activities and we do it for Krishna. But a higher stage is not to even be attached to those activities. In the sense, we are ready to do anything and everything for Krishna based on the direction we get. That's even more higher. You got it? Initially, that's what it is. Whatever we have propensities, we try to do it for Krishna. Okay, I like cooking, I like reading, I like shopping, let me shop for Krishna. So many things. But still, if suppose some seniors or some spiritual master, somebody gives a specific direction, okay, you start teaching DYS, or you start start a bhakti center, or maybe you something they give like that, we feel, I'm not into this, I don't want, we don't even go close to that thing. Right? It's not my cup of tea.
We have attachment, what we want to eat.
Yes, and also it's
comfortable with that,
right? Yeah, we want to stick into that comfort zone. We don't want to step out. But the thing is, if we step out, that's when we make more advancement. And the higher stage is like, okay, whatever is my order, I'm just going to try my best to fulfill that. Even if I like, so it's not about what I like or not like. See, that's the difference. It's no more about what I like or dislike. It's about what Krishna likes. And that is coming from whatever Krishna's representative tells us, spiritual master or devotees. So that's when it becomes more and more selfless. Even though now we are still doing it for Krishna's satisfaction, let's say. But now we are doing the activities also based on what Krishna wants. Because somebody, it may be like, take care of children. And let's say, after some point of taking care of children, I may feel, I want to rather work and give that money to Krishna. But somebody who is, the service is to work and give money to Krishna, they may say, I want to have children, I want to stay back home. This happens all the time. That's how mind is, it keeps tricking all the time, so that it can make us disobey or rather lose the determination in following the instructions we have been given. But the key, the secret of success for spiritual life is to somehow faithfully serve the order of spiritual master. Whatever it takes, just somehow, if we have received such an order, it's such a benediction, then just apply our life to serve that order. That's the secret of success for spiritual life. So I was remembering, initially, this also happens. Like, I can share, how I felt. So this principle is very, very nice, attractive when we hear, right? We have to serve the order. Because we have seen example of Srila Prabhupada. He dedicated his life to serve the order of spiritual master, and it came out, so well. Which is like preaching in English countries, and everything is wonderful, and the results came out, right? So we, at least I felt when initially when Guru Maharaj gave instruction, right? Chant attentive, try to chant quality of japa and read. At least read half an hour to 1 hour every day. So I felt, I don't want this order. I want order to, preach. No, I want order to preach. No, that order is the one which, you know, it's, you know, very much, you know, what this or what I, because we don't know how to apply to this order, why will I get the other order? Right? I'm not able to apply myself to basic order, you know, which I was given, and dedicate myself to this instruction. Why will we get a higher order of, you know, preaching or establishing a center or, you know, inspiring people with Krishna consciousness, right? So initially it feels like, you know, this is not instruction. Because my spiritual master is in front of me, he's giving me instruction, okay, improve your quality of japa. It feels like this is not order. But, you know, if we just somehow faithfully serve that instruction, we see it can actually transform our lives, and we can spend the whole lifetime trying to serve that instruction, and still we cannot fulfill that. So it's, you know, because Krishna will reveal deeper insights of, you know, how much we are lacking in fulfilling that instruction. So it's nice, you know, how we make progress. Okay, so we'll continue with the next verse, text 3. So here Krishna is talking about, you know, these two stages we talked about, yoga ruruksha and ruruksha and yoga ruda. Text number 3. Aruruksha munir yogam karma karanam ucchate yoga rudasya tasyaiva sama karanam ucchate. For one who is a neophyte in the eightfold yoga system, work is said to be the means. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. So basically, for initial stages, one should not give up his work. So he should continue his prescribed duties because he is not purified yet. That's the point, right? So that's why his work is the means. So by doing his prescribed duties, gradually gets purified. He comes to the higher stage. But whereas one who is already elevated, you know, is already in a perfect stage, for him, cessation of material activities means he need not indulge in material activities anymore. So that becomes the means. That means he is withdrawing himself. This is basically, again, it's talking about Dhyana Yoga, right? Because he withdraws from material activities and focuses on the super soul within. It's not about us, you know, for us, always we do activities, but our consciousness will be different. We do activities for Krishna always, all the time. Even in the pure stage, we do serve Krishna. But this is for the yoga, you know, Ashtanga Yogi. He stops the material activities at the final stage. So we will read the purport. It's a very small one. Very nice one.
The process of linking oneself with the Supreme is called yoga. It may be compared to the ladder for attaining the topmost spiritual realization. This ladder begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity and rises up to the perfect self-realization in the pure spiritual life. According to the various elevations, different parts of the ladder are known as by different names, but all in all, the complete ladder is called yoga and may be divided into three parts, namely Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. The beginning of the ladder is called Yoga Ruruksha stage, and the highest rung is called
Yoga Ruda.
Concerning the eightfold yoga system, attempts in the beginning to enter into meditation through regulative principles of the life and practice of the different sitting postures, which are more or less bodily exercises, are considered routine material activities. All such activities lead to achieving perfect mental equilibrium to control the senses. When one is accomplished in the practice of meditation, he ceases all the disturbing mental activities. A Krishna conscious person, however, is situated from beginning on the platform of meditation because he always thinks of Krishna, and being constantly engaged in the service of Krishna, he is considered to have ceased all the material activities.
Wow.
Well, it seems slightly contradictory to the first verse that you read, isn't it?
Which one?
So, in first verse, Krishna explains that a mystic is someone who performs his duties, but albeit in a detached manner. So, he does not cease to perform his duties. And here, someone who is advanced in yoga, ceases from material activities and engages in activities that are more related to Lord. So,
No. Yeah, that's why, you know, this verse Krishna is talking about Dhyana Yoga process, not the, you know, Bhakti Yoga.
Okay.
in Bhakti Yoga, that's why I clarified here. So the that's why in the second paragraph Prabhupada details, right? Like, let's read, I'll read the second paragraph again. So that's what exactly related to this verse. Concerning the eightfold yoga system, attempts in the beginning to enter into meditation through regulative principles of life and practice of different sitting postures are considered fruitive material activities. So the initial stages, somebody is doing this yama, niyama and asana, right? So yoga ruruksha state. So that are considered fruitive material activities still, because there is some result they're aiming. All such activities, but while doing that activities, what happens? Lead to achieving perfect mental equilibrium to control the senses. So it will help in sense control. When one is accomplished in the practice of meditation, then that means the final stages of dharana, dhyana and samadhi, he ceases all disturbing mental activities. So withdraws himself from mental activities. Because this is for the Ashtanga Yogi who focuses on the Supreme, he doesn't do any activities. But not for Bhakti Yogi. That's why I said, you know, even in the pure state, we always engage in activities. So that's why, you know, he is talking about the specific Jnana Yoga, what are the different stages and what is the process in achieving those stages. That's why, you know, at the end he says, of all this Yogi, Bhakti Yogi is the best. Because he... So the first verse is not the beginning of this Dhyana Yoga thing. He's actually saying, okay, I'm going to tell you the Dhyana, Ashtanga Yoga.
Actually, a mystic and someone who is advanced in yoga, he's not referring to the same, okay.
Okay, what first verse is telling, what Krishna is saying, that's what is we read in the purport, is that I'm going to tell you about Dhyana Yoga process. But before that, I'm going to give you statement that, even though you do all this yoga everything, among that actually Nishkama Karma Yogi or Bhakti Yogi is the best. That's what he's telling in first verse. He's giving his declaration already. No, I'm going to tell you the yoga process, but actually Karma Yogi is the best. That's what we read in the purport,
so,
right?
Mataji, true mystic is
Bhakti Yogi. Yes, right. Yes. True mystic is the Bhakti. Bhakti Yogi. Got it? This point? Okay. Okay, so then... So first paragraph Prabhupada is talking about a yoga ladder. So if you have to talk about this yoga ladder, and if you write down, you know, yoga ruksha is the bottom rung, yoga ruda is the topmost rung, and he's saying these are three parts of yoga. Dhyana yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, bhakti yoga are different parts of yoga. We cannot consider them as different yogas, but they all lead to the highest goal, which is supreme, and among them bhakti yoga is the topmost. And then finally, you know, the last paragraph is so sweet. Prabhupada is saying a Krishna conscious person, however, is situated from the beginning on the platform of meditation because he always thinks of Krishna. So he's already already in dharana, dhyana stage. And being constantly engaged in the service of Krishna is considered to have ceased all material activities. So he doesn't withdraw from activities. Point Prabhu, same point again. Because of being engaged in service of Krishna, he is automatically ceasing from material activities. Right? Doesn't mean he is not doing activities. He is not doing material activities. So he is doing all spiritual activities. Okay.
What about sadhana bhakti people, Mataji? You also have some do's and don'ts, and you do. How is that in relation to
the eightfold? So that is. In Bhakti Yoga, there are different, not types, but...
levels?
We can say levels, So one is the Sadhana Bhakti, where we have these rules and regulations and, it's kind of like Yama, Niyama. And, we practice certain things and we force our mind to, remember Krishna, all this. Because we don't have spontaneous attraction. So this is called Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Means Vaidhi means rules. Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Navimatsi is very tired. So it's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. But by doing all of this, at one point we have, by the mercy of Holy Name and Spiritual Master, our spontaneous attraction for Krishna awakens. So then we can follow this Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, where we follow a Raganuga devotee from Vrindavan. Our goal is to go to Goloka Vrindavan. So we cannot go to Goloka Vrindavan unless we serve a devotee from Vrindavan. So we you know, we'll be given direction to follow a certain devotee. You know, we get attracted automatically to certain type of devotee from, you know, Goloka Dham, Yashoda Mata, or, you know, some gopi or somebody. Then we follow their, you know, these are all esoteric subjects which we don't know, which we cannot have access now. But, you know, just to complete this, so then, you know, we think about, you know, what is their service, how do they serve Krishna, what dress they wear, what color, you know, how they serve Krishna. We find out all those details and we try to follow in their mood, you know, how they do it. So we try to follow. I don't know how it means, what it means to follow. Then, you know, then by following that, we get the spontaneous, that thing increases to become a love for Krishna. That becomes again, you know, prema, final stage. So that we can say, you know, it falls into this ladder. But as Prabhupada says, for us, dharana, dhyana, everything comes from beginning only. It's not like, you know, after doing yama, niyama, then we start thinking about Krishna. While doing this yama, niyama, we are already thinking of Krishna. So for us, everything is collapsed into one. No, but then the final prema comes later on, like that. Which is the complete, you know, samadhi. Samadhi comes, you know, later on. So that's why, you know, this chapter seems pretty much boring for many of us. It's like, you know, we don't have to do anything with the asanas, we are not going to do anything. So why you have to spend so much?
I was saying the same thing. If this is not required, why are
we
doing this?
Why you have to study? But we have to study because it's part of, you know, we have to go sequentially in Bhagavad Gita. It's part of what Krishna has given us. And to come to this part, the asanas and all will be boring. But later on when it talks about mind control and about the culmination of the yogas, it will become very interesting. You know, very nice. Something which we need to remember. Okay, so we'll continue then. Then next verse. Next verse. La, very small purport. So we'll continue. Yadahi nendriyateshu na karmasu anusajyate sarva sankalpa sanyasi yoga rudas tadochyate. A person is said to be elevated in yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. So same thing in the final stage, what does a person in Yoga Ruda stage do? He renounces all his material desires, so he doesn't act for sense gratification or fruitive activities again. So he acts only for actually service of the Supreme. That's Bhakti Yogi. So we'll read the purport.
When a person is fully engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he is pleased in himself and thus he is no longer engaged in sense gratification or in fruitive activities. Otherwise, one must be engaged in sense gratification, since one cannot live without engagement. Without Krishna consciousness, one must be always seeking self-centered or extended selfish activities. But a Krishna conscious person can do everything for the satisfaction of Krishna and thereby be perfectly detached from sense gratification. One who has no such realization must mechanically try to escape material desires before being elevated to the top rung of the yoga ladder.
So the point is, because a devotee completely engages himself in transcendental loving service of the Lord, he is no longer engaging himself for sense gratification. This we have heard so many times. It automatically he achieves that goal. But the other thing which we can remember all the time, Prabhupada is saying is, one must, the third line, it, one must be engaged in sense gratification since one cannot live without engagement. Right? So, soul, Krishna declared, right? Soul is very active, it has to be always acting. So, if you are not acting for Krishna, then definitely you are acting for sense gratification or Maya. Right? So there is no middle ground. It's not like, you know, I'm just in the middle, I'm just thinking of Krishna, but still, Rampad Maharaj always says, you know, I have two pockets. One is Krishna pocket, one is my pocket. Now I put, always when I do something, I'll put little bit in my pocket, but most of it is Krishna pocket, but still I have my pocket. So it's not like that. No, no, we should come to the stage where we have only Krishna pocket. No, it's, and we also, you know, in the initial stages, we try to put our leg on both boats, right? Try to, for some time we can stay, but after some time both are going in opposite directions, we just fall in the middle. Right, so we just have to make up our mind, you know, choose something, and at least, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, so many lives we have tried sense gratification, same thing we have been doing, you know, so many forms of life, so many No, every life we have children, every life we have husband, every life we have sex, every life we have, you know, four things, eating, sleeping, waiting, defending. So many times we tried. At least now we have come to the stage, we are hearing the real thing. Prabhupada says, you know, he requested his disciples, you know, at least why don't you give one life to Krishna? Just give one life fully to Krishna. Without lethargy, you know. Krishna says, no, we don't be lethargic, right? Get up and fight. We say, you know, we are giving one life to Krishna, but still we are, you know, lazy. Okay, I'll do it the slow pace, Krishna. You know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to cause so much pain to my body. It's like, I want to give still to you, but, you know, just let me take it slowly like that. You know, there are so many ways we can make progress, you know. We can always push ourselves. We can always, you know, improve our service. You know, the best way to avoid complacency, you know, the key to avoid complacency. No, initially we take it up very much enthusiastically. It's very, you know, well known. Initially when we take it, you know, first 1 year, first few months, it's like, you know, spiritual world is coming. All the devotees are pure devotees. You know, everybody, we want to do vancha kalpa and we want to take up. Every time we come to temple, it's like, oh, wow, what a wonderful love. Every prasadam morsel we eat, it's so wonderful, right? After some time, you know, this becomes our life and becomes routine. Our life is routine, right? So it becomes routine. So then how to keep up this enthusiasm, how to focus ourselves on the goal and not become, you know, stagnant or, you know, relaxed or slacking and everything. What's the key?
Aim for something higher or stretch yourself.
Push it. One is to come out of your comfort zone. You know, try to take up a service which, you know, you are not used to, but, you know, do it for Krishna if it's asked by devotees. Like, that means changing the job, you know, so many things. You know, do something like that which push yourself, you know, which helps you depend on Krishna, or have kids that helps you depend on Krishna more, or have marriage, you know, if that is naturally coming. So, no, take up those services. So,
what is second marriage?
It's a very, sorry?
What is
or get married.
No, take more services, you said?
Yeah, take up more services. You know,
services beyond your
capabilities, not too much that, you know, you just fall apart. It little bit stretch, but not too much. Something, that's one thing. Other thing is, you know, always try to see if we cannot, let's say our capacity is done, like we cannot take up any more service, because any more service means some other day I have to go regularly to some place and do, I don't have, let's say, that much time. My work is busy, I'm already, you know, packed whole day. Then the best is to, other thing we could do is to try to improve the quality of the service we are doing. And try to, you know, let's say if I'm gift shop I'm doing, you know, how I can be more Krishna conscious when I'm being there. You know, how am I really treating people with respect, you know, can I improve my communication with people? Can I, you know, instead of being restless or impatient trying to run, you know, can I be more Krishna conscious? Can I serve them better? Like that. Or, you know, can I plan better before going to that service? So many things, you know, try to improve that service. Chanting also, you know, it becomes routine. Okay, can I improve? Can I do some more rounds better? Can I, you know, so many, can I chant better, earlier? Like that.
Mataji, the examples which you are giving is like more localized kind of. Localized in the sense of those who are here. What if, like, because I'm personally saying, when I'm with my family, right?
Uh-huh.
So my families are coming, going, so like that, when either my parents are there or my neighbors are there. So that's when it's a very different, again, like, as if almost like you are staying in India, let's say, like, part of it, like So that's when things are different. So in such case, how do you actually, because the time is, you spend more time for them as well. It's not like how you were, like, earlier how it was. So that's when also, like, how do you improve all this?
Yeah. So then, we can see that our relationship with them or our service to them is service to Krishna, right? We should not see it as separate. So as a service to them, the, you know, best thing is, you know, if we can chant properly and do our sadhana properly, then we can serve them better. You know, the way we can serve them is by our, you know, example, by our qualities, you know, so that they can gradually get attracted to Krishna. They can see, you know, how by following
like by your
behavior, you know, I'm speaking this, but it's very, when it comes to test, it's very tough, I can say, especially with mother-in-law, it's very tough. No, but, you know, but that's the ground Krishna has given us. And for especially, you know, very close to heart is how I can, you know, be Krishna conscious with my child, how I can give Krishna consciousness to my child. I can always improve, right? I can always know, think about telling different stories to my kid. I can give them nice nursery rhymes based on Bhagavatam, or I can teach them Bhagavatam. You know, so many things, you know, it just unfolds. It's unlimited, the amount of Krishna consciousness we can give to our kids. If they are favorable, if they take it up, it's unlimited, right? You know, the whole world is, because they're just growing up at every stage. You can do so many things with them based on their age and these things, right? So, it's, you know, we can just dedicate the whole time with that and still say, you know, I am still busy. You know, still I know I don't have enough time. You know, like that. We can always improve in that service, you know, how I can give better. Or, you know, in a day-to-day dealing with the child, like, you know, am I really calm and peaceful and patient and tolerant and loving to my child today, or am I just rushing and, you know, just getting things done and just feed him and let him go and let me listen to lecture or let me see my emails or, you know, like that. So many things, quality we can improve, right? Like,
yeah, that's very important.
Yeah.
Keeping your, like, cool and...
Yeah.
So otherwise, like, sometimes... Yeah, my mother, she shared, like, the way you are reacting, nobody will say that you are, like, going to, like, such a, like, beautiful place, like, Islam temple, and then...
Why you? I got a compliment from mother-in-law. My mother-in-law says that when she was there, no, she said, you know, we have fights, right? So when we had fights, she said, you know, what's the point of your chanting japa? What's the point of your japa? You don't say
that. That was told by my mother only. Like, my mother is something, don't like... So you are not behaving the way you should, like,
yeah.
A person like who is getting into this thing, you should really try to control your temper, anger, all these things. First focus on yourself, then only you focus on what I'm doing wrong or what your father is doing wrong. Don't focus on that part.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But the thing is, of course, you know, people, they don't have the consciousness to see that sometimes anger, everything can be used in Krishna service. We may get angry because, you know, our service is getting affected, or, you know, some way or the other, it may be related to Krishna, which, you know, they may not have the eyes to see. They may see only anger. They may not see, you know, what's the consciousness behind it, you know, what is the pain? Is it pain because of me, really? Some, many times it's because of false ego getting hurt. You know, we are not so advanced, but... Sometimes there is some amount of Krishna there, at least, you know, according to our level of, you know, advancement and purification. They cannot see that. So, you know, they just see black and white, you know. Devotee means always calm, sadhu, sadhu. It's not like that.
That is sadhana phase, so.
Yeah.
But
so, I think... sorry. Yeah, you were saying something from...
I was just saying that, you know, if we can treat our mother-in-law as mother...
So that's an ideal thing.
Our level of service, like,
wow.
Even without going to temple, right? If we are totally occupied, if we can somehow serve her in the way we serve our mother, and it's difficult.
Yeah.
I'm not assuming it's difficult.
But I think
all the stories that I hear.
That's why you are saying
both
so
are
no,
exactly.
I can say that.
Both are in this situation, both are on the spiritual path.
It's easy.
It is like journey is like very
easy.
Supportive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like every day you are improving.
Yes.
And beyond your imagination,
how much
coordination will improve.
Yeah.
Without any effort.
Yeah.
But Bhadri, one thing that you said, don't know, those are not in Krishna consciousness. They generally don't understand. But if I will tell my side also, if I will take any decision, it's not like mostly like kind of selfish.
Uh-huh.
It's not like I'm totally saying devotee side, okay, yeah, my service is getting hurt. Maybe I have some attachment to something.
Uh-huh.
So that's the reason. The same example that I'm just trying to continue.
Mm.
Like
Mostly for us, it's false ego getting hurt or, you know, some.
Like I planned this,
yes,
it's not happening that way.
Yes.
Sometimes
Krishna is like in a secondary thought, but
yes.
I planned this, it's
yes.
not going on
yes.
in that way.
Yeah. Of course, because we deal services with devotees, so with devotees there is no reason to become angry. Unless, you know, actually it is said that nobody has authority to chastise anybody unless it's a spiritual. Only spiritual master has the authority to chastise this disciple. Otherwise, no devotee has authority to tell anybody anything to anybody, actually. No, it's because we just have to do vancha kalpa and treat everybody as masters. That's the mood devotee has to have. Even though we are doing service together, like that, you know, we don't have it, actually. So.
But here, I was a devotee chastising other devotees.
When we do service together, it comes, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sometimes
maybe
under pressure, it comes.
Yeah.
like you're running short of time or something or something.
Something, yeah. Especially when you didn't have sleep in the night and you have to deal with kids in the daytime and you have to deal with Mataji.
It's a hospital for fallen souls, so everyone is recuperating.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
No, I was saying it's a hospital, so I was reading this poem, I don't know, all of you might have read, so I don't remember the poem exactly, but the conclusion is that the temple is not a museum of saints, but a hospital for fallen souls.
Mm.
Every sinner has a past and, every saint has a past and every sinner has a future, so
yeah.
Do not judge. So it's like everyone
is getting cured.
Everyone is getting cured, so obviously...
The extension to this which I heard from Gaurang Prabhu once, he said, is that you're all in the hospital, everybody has a different disease, but we are saying that disease is bad. He's looking at other bed, they say, you know, he has cholera, I don't have cholera, but I'm... No, we are pointing others, you know, you are bad, I'm better. Okay, so we can stop here. And actually, I don't know whether they're still online. Today, this our Soumya Mataji Kulin Prabhu, they attended for first chapter. And they...
Yes, I'm here still.
Yeah. So, and then they delivered the baby boy Satvik. Now he's close to 2 years, Mataji? Soumya?
Yes. He just completed 2 years.
So then on Radhashtami, I think we met Mataji, then we were saying, you know, now we are bringing back all the mothers into the fold and trying to, you know, get them back to Bhagavad Gita reading. So we invited them and her mother came and they left and today she promised she will attend and she's joining online. So Soumya, you want to share something, what you heard or anything from your experiences?
Actually, just a couple of things that were going through my mind during today's class. You know, one, I think I left when we were still on in the middle of chapter 2.
Huh.
I just gave my first introduction chapter exam and after that I didn't complete chapter 2. But even after 2 years I'm joining back. Bhagavad Gita is so, you know, it's such a nice text that it doesn't feel like, oh, I don't understand anything, or it's not that I understand everything also.
Oh, very nice.
You can pick up at any point and you can still continue. So that's very good. And I'm glad, you know, I met you. And I'm thankful to Shyamala Mataji for, you know, pushing and asking several times, when are you joining? Because, like, you know, in today's session also, we discussed same thing, that we have to continuously make that extra effort to do little more than what we are already doing. And yes, thankfully to our good teachers, you know, thankfully I'm able to join, resume this class again. We'll probably do over Skype for some time before I can come in person, but this is very nice.
Well, thank you so much, Soumya. We really appreciate you taking the time, you know.
No, you shouldn't say that. We all appreciate you taking the time to, you know, conduct this class.
Yeah, this class is a great source of inspiration for us. You know, whole week we look forward for this, in all of your enthusiasm and sincerity. You know, it changes our, you know, dynamics of our life and it gives us inspiration back to our services. And so we are so grateful that somehow, you know, by Krishna's mercy and Guru Maharaj's mercy, that we pulled through our pregnancy, delivery and growing up. So, you know, we'll pray that we can continue this longer and we'll complete this Bhagavad Gita and hopefully do Bhagavatam also with all of you. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, so we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? We are waiting for the kids gang to come.
Very similar thing what Rakesh had told me once. Like, well, I was also worried, like, if I can understand or I'm totally out of track. And he said, like, it's like a circle. There is like infinite entry point. So don't worry about that. And you can, like, whatever you will understand, you can apply to your life and you will always understand that. Don't worry about that. Don't try to associate, like, the previous verses. Or just take it independently and you will understand it.
Yeah.
So that is so true.
Yeah. That's correct. Yeah, actually, that's what I was telling Madhavi Mataji the other day. She was asking, you know, when did you read Mataji whole Bhagavad Gita? Then I was telling, we never had this, you know, Bhakti Viksha or somebody teaching us the whole thing. Of course, our teacher taught, but it was very rapid thing. Like, you know, used to come once in every year. And in 1.5 months, we used to do 6 chapters. So it was so fast, rapid fire Bhagavad Gita classes. And we used to write, within that, we used to write 3-4 exams. We have half the time reading exams and our everyday class and weekend whole day, weekend study classes. And so that's how we read that. So we didn't read full purports. Of course, now we are also not reading. So the one, the thing which we got the essence is from the Bhakti Vrikshas, where, you know, people come and go all the time. You new people, whenever you meet anybody in temple, we invite them to Bhakti Vrikshas. They come from the fresh background, so they keep asking questions about why demigods. Same questions keep repeating, so we are always in the loop, always in second chapter, never going, making progress. So like, it was always like that, for 2-3 years it was like that. So then I was telling her, actually, the point is that actually you all have all the concepts now. The whole thing about, you know, Krishna consciousness and all the philosophy, everything you all have. Anytime you can just read the whole Bhagavad Gita, you will be able to understand. I don't have to sit here and teach, actually. It's like, you know, you all have the concepts. Because the same concepts we have covered, introduction, everything, these are now more details of, you know, all the different... this thing, different aspects.
As you said, like, every time you read a new layer of meaning.
Yes, exactly. So. And the other thing, the point about, that's why the main point about these classes is I try to bring up mostly the, you know, practical aspects, you know, how to make progress, how to, so that we can go back with inspiration to do our sadhana, everything more. So more than, when it may not be sometimes connected to the verse, everything, but that's the thing which I want to give. Right, you know, that's so that, you know, it's inspiration for our week, and, you know, it comes as like, you know, lets me go refresh myself and come back like that. So that's why, you know, but hopefully we'll cover it also, you know, complete it also soon, so you can all get your degrees.
Those are very helpful, Madhuri.
Yeah.
Because sometimes what I feel, we are reading very high level, like devotee does this, devotee does this, but like for me to, what is the gap and what is the path, those tips are helping a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not able to follow 100, but whatever.
At least, yeah, we have a roadmap.
Helping a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Towards at least seeing what is the delta and what is the first step I need to take.
Yeah. So we'll stop here. Hare Krishna.